Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Terry Gowdy. He is the author of Castle Bots, Book 1, From Earth to the Asteroid. As well, I have with me 12-year-old Ben Weldon. He reviewed Castle Bots and loved it. And to quote him, he said, "It was fun." Ben aspires to become an astronaut, so books like this are of great interest to him. What may be science fiction now, hey, may not be when he's flying around in space. But first, a little bit about Terry Gowdy. Terry's writing career began in third grade when his grandma typed up his poems and short stories and created a book. Terry is currently the author of the Star Park Adventure series. His first book in the series is called Star Park, First Adventure. Terry's second book, Castle Bots, Book 1, From Earth to the Asteroid, and this is the one we're talking about today, just came out this summer. Terry lives happily in California with his wife and children. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad that you're online with us. And hi, Ben.
Hello.
It's a real pleasure to have you help me today. I just love it when we get an opportunity to have our young reviewers and help us out, because they're the ones that read the book and they are the ones that have a lot of questions to ask, and it's really great to have the reviewer and the author be able to speak to each other. So, but before we start going on this, Terry, just give our listeners sort of a brief lowdown on what this book is really about.
Well, it's about a teen, and he uses a world-sized virtual reality world that's set on a space station. And he's suddenly called in an emergency situation by a mysterious General Z to actually use this virtual reality world, not to, you know, for fun, but to actually try to figure out a solution to save Earth from a rogue asteroid that's heading right towards Earth.
That sounds really exciting. So, Ben, do you have a question for Terry?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
How many more books do you plan to write?
Seven is what I... You know, I have sketched out seven that I would like to write.
Is this a series from this? This is like book number one, and so are you talking about then the seven will be in the series?
Yes.
Wow.
I wrote the first one that's called Star Park First Adventure, and then the second book, which is this Castle Bots book, is the second. And the story was so big when I was working on it with the editor, the second book, that we're actually making it a two-book miniseries within the series. So the second and third book in the series are both going to be in the Castle Bots virtual reality world's scenario.
I have a question. You keep mentioning virtual reality world. What is that for those of us that may not know?
Well, it's like you go into a place and there's a computer system, you know, like a gigantic system of computers, and it actually, if you've ever seen, like, say, in Star Wars, you know, like a hologram, you know.
Yeah.
And you see, like, this image, and it's not like a real person, but it's like an image there. Well, imagine if that became a technology that was super great, and you're actually walking maybe like what would be like in an empty soundstage or something like that, or a huge, huge space. But, like, the people that you're interacting and the things that you're seeing are it's like you're in a real world. It's hard to tell the difference between... You know, because of the accuracy of all the science fiction type of, you know, science fact type of stuff that's in the background, you have this complete virtual reality world that is, you know, all around you. And so you can have this adventure, and it's a lot of fun because you have robots in there. You know, you could have real physical robots that are like part of the, you know, the mechanical stuff that's in the background of this virtual reality world, or you could have like holograms that are creating images, and you might be looking off into a distance and looking at an island off the shore or something like that. But it's not a real island that's physically there, but to you it is.
On the copy of the book that I have, it says book one. Is the first adventure going to be a prequel to it?
Yeah, the first adventure, that's a very good way to put it. The first adventure is actually like a prequel to it. The books kind of stand alone. You could read the second book, and I worked to put stuff in the first couple of chapters, you know, so you'd be up to speed. But, yeah, there's a book that comes before the first Castle Bots book, and that kind of is like the beginning book.
Oh, okay. So you create this character, this kind of mysterious character called Threadneedle.
Yeah.
Who kind of helps out Scott. Is or was he a Castle Bot?
No, he's kind of like a mysterious, unknown character that's in the adventure, nobody can quite figure out why he's there, who he is. And so it comes out more in the second book, kind of like as a surprise, who he actually is. The second Castlebots book.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those characters that are set up in the first Castlebots book that you'll find more out about, you know, in a surprise fun way in the second mm-hmm. book. You know, that's where I get really excited about, you know, going from Castlebots book one to Castlebots book two, because in Castlebots, the second book, it's the final ending of it, and it's just really so much fun, because the things that get started in the first Castlebots book, they're completing themselves in the second one, so that's a lot of fun.
I bet. You also have the character Lady Pearl.
Yeah.
She had those apples that contained that computer virus that affected the Castlebots in a strange way. Why does she need the gems that she forced them to mine using her virus apples?
Yeah, that's very interesting. She has this goal of she's a very frustrated person, you know, and in the second Castlebots books you'll kind of discover why she was frustrated, and she had been a child star, and she kind of had some bad experiences and stuff, and that happens in the second Castlebot book. But in this book, she's very frustrated, and she was in the very first Star Park First Adventure. She was a robotics expert, and she was one of the people in the background that kind of rose up in the Star Park company that created the Star Park virtual reality world. And she kind of started doing some bad things in the first adventure, and she became kind of like a villain and somebody that, you know, wasn't doing the right things. And so she was very frustrated, and she found out a way to get into the second adventure. You know, in fact, she stows away on board a space shuttle, you know, in the first part of the book, and she assumes the identity of Two-Face, which is a robot character from the first book. And so she gets into the adventure by trickery, you know, and she becomes the villain of the story in the second, in the, you know, the Castlebots book one. And in Castlebots book two, I don't know if it's given up too much away, but she actually becomes a hero. She has a change in her life, and she really turns a corner, and she becomes a very good person. In fact, she's really becomes one of the crucial people that's going to help make stopping the asteroid to really contact Earth. Scott is like the main person, and he's the one that's like really trying to solve this whole thing, and he was the one to called him to do this, but she's going to play a really principal part in that. So that says that everybody, you know, sometimes people start off a little rocky in life, but, you know, they can turn a corner and they can really grow and become a wonderful person.
Is she also the person who shot Scott with the light arrow?
Yes. You picked up on that. Wow, that's great. Yeah, I had a lot of fun
with that. It was a pretty fun book.
Love stuff like that.
How did she get her spaceship that being used in the Castlebots world?
Later on in the second book, we find out that when the Castlebots were first sent to this asteroid, they had a special mission there on that asteroid that they were doing. And actually, one of the spaceships that took them there had been put in an underground cavern. And she had reached the world a little before Scott, and she had kind of looked around, and she had found this underground spaceship, and she actually secretly at night made it go up outside, you know, like, and then come back down, and everybody thought she was coming from space for the first time. But that was just a trick on her part. But that's behind the scenes, and it doesn't come out till the second Castlebots book.
Yeah. Who or what are the space pirates? Are they an evil branch of Castlebots?
You know, when she came there and she did the trick with the spaceship, she also found, like, there was the main Castlebots group, which was, you know, they were living in the nine great castles around the big, you know, circle. It was like a two-mile wide square, and these castles, big, huge castles are around the, you know, this central area. And she had, but there were other people that were Castlebots that were living underground. And they were trying to kind of hide away and be separate from the other ones. And she had that's where she found the spaceship, and she had been in contact with them. And she got them onto her ship, took them up at night up into the, you know, way up in the atmosphere, and then pretended that she was just coming into the world by itself, and then she landed, and then these other people she called space pirates she got them to be her helpers and stuff like that. It comes out later in the second book that she had kind of tricked them, and she'd promised them certain things, and which wasn't good, but they actually, it was kind of a reuniting between the underground castle bots and the ones that were living above ground in the second book.
Who placed the castle bots on this asteroid? Who assigned them the task of?
Well, there was this creator king that put the castle bots on this world, and there was the castle bots that are living in the nine castles. They had their parents. They were like an old generation robot, castle bot, mm-hmm. and they were miners, and they dug dirt out of the asteroid, and they hurled this dirt into space, and it was their way of actually taking this asteroid, and by mining out all the dirt out of the asteroid and throwing it off into space, that was the way that they were going to, they themselves, that was their own idea of how they were going to take care of this asteroid that was threatening this third planet away from the sun. So, but what happened was that they wore armor all the time, and they were supposed to have armor on all the time. But what happened was they one time had this big kind of celebration, and they decided, well, for once we could take off our armor, and we could just, you know, not have our armor on, you know, to protect ourselves. And they took off this armor for this big, you know, celebration, and they had this dome over this area of the asteroid, you know, that protected them from space radiation. Well, at that point in time, some meteorites had come through the dome and shattered little areas in the dome, and all the space radiation came in, and their parents unfortunately died out because they didn't have the protection from the space radiation.
Well, that explains that.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We're speaking today with Terry Gowdy, and I'm assisted by Ben Weldon, a 12-year-old book reviewer. You can find out more about Terry and his book, Castle Bots, on his website, starparkadventures.com. Now, you know, I just want to interject here. There's the teens apparently are risking their lives in this story. Is that correct?
They're not in one sense physically because this is all in a virtual reality world. But in the story, there is a real threat that this thing can come to Earth. So if the virtual reality world just shut down, you know, by some computer error or something like that, like the power switch got tripped or something like that, they would find themselves in this big, empty, you know, open space,
mm-hmm.
and they could get back on the shuttle and they could go back to Earth. So it's what I would call mild peril.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like real dangerous peril. It's kind of like a mild peril in the sense that, you know, I mean, the worst thing that could happen is, you know, they were really specially chosen to, Scott was, the other ones that later went into the adventure with him, they were specially chosen to help figure out how to solve the problem of this asteroid that's heading towards Earth. And so the peril is really Earth being needing a way to, you know, guard against this asteroid that's coming at it. And so inside the virtual reality world, in a sense, they weren't in peril.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for Ben, actually. Ben, you loved this book, and I know that you're looking forward to the next book and probably the prequel, too. So I'm very curious, why is it that you liked this book? What was it that just really said, yeah?
I really like books with action and fantasy and science fiction, and this was a little bit of a mix of all of those things, so I just thought it was a pretty good book. That's what I like.
So was this sort of a page-turner for you, too?
Well, yeah, I picked it up, I sat down, and I didn't put it down until I was done.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So, Terry, how much reality did you actually put into this? You know, space tourism, space adventures, I mean, that's kind of the buzz right now. Is it really science fiction?
Well, you know, I think there's kind of, I was trying to think about how to explain this to somebody and kind of the way I look at it. And I remember back, you know, when I was a kid, back in the 20th century, that, you know, they had this one comic character who had this wristwatch, you know, that was like a communicator and stuff, and acted like a phone, you know. And, of course, back in those days, you had telephone booths if you were outside your house where you had to make a call, or you had like a landline inside your house. And those are the only two ways that you could talk with someone by telephone. You had to have a house, you know, with a big thing come from the telephone pole into the house. You know, and you'd pick up the phone and you'd talk to somebody. Or if you were out somewhere else and you stopped, you know, you got into a phone booth and you made a phone call. Well, now all that stuff is going through the airwaves. Back in when I was a boy, you know, having something like a cell phone, which we have today, which are completely wireless and stuff like that, you know, a cell phone back when I was a boy would be something completely science fiction. But what happens is you have scientists and stuff that work on things and they develop things and they study things. And they actually, you know, so I think like somebody like me that writes science fiction, you know, I'm dreaming up things. I'm kind of like a dreamer and stuff, but I'm dreaming things sort of intelligently in a way because I can see that someday down the road this stuff might come. And so you have people that kind of dream things and stories, but a lot of times, you know, a number of years later, you have scientists and engineers and modelers, and you have all sorts of people, you know, that all work together, and they come up with different things. You know, one of the things that I was really interested in high school, when I was in junior high, I was, you know, I lived in a very tiny town, you know, but I had a friend and I, and we did a co-project as a science fair project, and we actually kind of won what was the equivalent of the state science fair, you know, and in junior high. And, you know, so I was all excited about doing that and stuff like that. And then my next year, I was going into high school, and my advisor in high school, I wanted to build an artificial hand where I had read in some book that your brain still sends signals, even if you have, like, say you have an arm that's been amputated or lost in some way. The brain still sends signals to that limb, you know, what's there. And I had this idea that I wanted to build, like, this artificial hand to help people that, you know, had lost a hand. And so that was science fiction back in my days. And I didn't have any money to do it. And I actually found a study by, you know, a Russian team that had actually built a hand. I think it cost about $10,000 in that day for them to build this thing, you know. And I had to give up on my science fair project because I couldn't, you know, I couldn't afford it. I couldn't build it. But I could imagine it, you know. And so I think, if, you know, in the 21st century, we now have the, you know, the people, you know, Ben's age and all these people are coming up, and they're in the age of cell phones and stuff like that. And they can imagine and build this stuff, and things that will help our country and help our world.
Terry, you credit your nonverbal autistic son in inspiring the story for, and I'd like you to talk about that.
Yeah, you know, when you think about an asteroid coming at Earth, you know, and you're asking, you know, and then you ask Scott Freeman to go to this virtual reality world on a space station that was made for fun, you know, and he's supposed to try to somehow solve this problem of this asteroid heading towards Earth, you know, how do you do that, you know? And my son, you know, he's nonverbal. He's starting to say a word every now and then and stuff, you know. But he definitely learns at his own pace. He's very visual. He'll actually, he has a very hard time trying to write his name, but he can type it on the computer. And he couldn't put a crossword puzzle together probably, but he can play complex computer games on the computer. So, you know, that it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of odd, you know, that's that way, you know. But I one time, one of the experiences that I had was I had a week off of vacation, and my wife was doing something with my daughter and her friends, and they were going out to, you know, going out to McDonald's and going to swimming at, you know, the pool and all this stuff like that, and I was staying home with my son. And I had, and he was about 6 years old at that time, and he was not potty trained, and that was very frustrating to me that he wasn't potty trained. And, you know, so kind of, you know, we had this agenda to kind of make it a fun time for my daughter, and then I could spend time with my son and stuff like that, you know, and so, but I somehow I got in my mind that says, you know, I'm going to potty train him this week. You know, I'm going to help him so that he learns potty train, you know. And so I would kind of, I remember one time that I was in the house here alone, and, you know, my wife and kids and my daughter were out and doing stuff with their friends, and, you know, and I was kind of really kind of, in a way, I was kind of riding him. Not I wasn't riding him in a sense that I was trying to really push him too hard, but I think in a way I was, but I was just trying to really encourage him to do that, you know. And so at this one point in time, and one thing he had, we had these toys that we especially had. They're like, we called them Chewies, and it was just kind of like soft rubber. And when one thing about autism, they can get very frustrated at some point. And so when he gets frustrated, we give him this Chewy, and he bites down on it really hard, but it wouldn't hurt his teeth and stuff, and it kind of helped him to relax his jaw and stuff like that. But, you know, so I, but one time during that week, it was getting towards the end of the week, and I hadn't had any success with him. And so I kind of, like, you know, tried to really urge him to sit down, you know, proactively on the toilet, and I was trying to get him to, because I could see he needed to go to the toilet. And, you know, I leaned down at the wrong moment, and I kind of moved kind of funny, and my ear went right over towards his mouth, and he clamped down on my ear.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I cut it, and there was some blood there and stuff like that, you know. And I realized that at that point, you know, people develop at their own pace, and we just need to encourage people and really believe in them and help in any way we can. But, you know, they're going to learn at their own pace. So, you know, fast forward 4 years later, you know, I was – we had these, and we had bought all these videos and DVDs and books and stuff on potty training. All of a sudden, he starts digging out all these books. He starts digging out all these videos on potty training. He was putting them in the VCR and the DVD, and he was watching all this stuff just hours and hours a day. And he did that about for 1 week. It was all self-initiated by him. You know, I had a long time given up on him doing that, you know. And he just started doing it himself from that point on, you know, and going to potty by himself and that kind of thing, you know. And that taught me a whole lot, you know. And so I'm kind of I have to learn to have patience in my life, and I have to learn to, you know, see the value in other people and that they work at their own pace, but always to know that, you know, there's always a future and a hope for everybody, you know. And that was one thing I started out the book, and I found a quotation that talked about a future and a hope. And I think my son has future and hope, you know. It's like when he's 6 years old and he's not potty trained, there's a future and a hope that he can be potty trained at 10, you know. Though I couldn't imagine it at the time, it's possible.
What a great story. And Terry, you had mentioned asteroids earlier, and we know that NASA, you know, has spotted something like, what is it, 25,000 asteroids that have never been seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you've done a little bit of research on that. Just maybe tell us a little about this.
Well, yeah, NASA got a brand new telescope, and they could see stuff they could never see before. And they saw all these asteroids, and it's just amazing. And they saw, I think, about 25,000 of them that were called near-Earth asteroids, which are actually a great distance away. They might be 130,000 miles, 130 million miles, or whatever away, you know, but they're, you know, they're considered, so in the story we have, the book is talked about asteroids coming towards Earth and, you know, possibly being a threat to Earth, and that's a real possibility. One of the articles I'd written, you know, NASA has a lot of information about this. NASA has a website, you know, at nasa.gov, and they have a lot of information about that. But, you know, they talked about there was this one asteroid that on March 23rd, 1989, it started, it came within 400,000 miles of Earth. And the asteroid at one point, you know, they weren't in the same sync of their, you know, their movement, but at one point where Earth had been 6 hours different, the asteroid had been too. So now you have the Earth and the asteroid both having touched the same point in space within 6 hours of each other. So, I mean, there's always a possibility of stuff like that happen, you know, and I really realized in writing a book that, you know, maybe, you know, it's a lot of fun, and I like to do imagination, like science fiction, you know, that there, you know, there's asteroids out, you know, there, and that could really happen, you know. It's like, you know, from what they say, they think, you know, that's a possibility, and there's scientists that are tracking these, what they call near-Earth asteroids, and they're tracking to see, that, you know, what might happen, stuff like that. But I think the big lesson that, you know, I've learned too about from life is that, you know, we never may have like Scott Freeman, have an asteroid that's coming at us and trying to, you know, obliterate, you know, our existence on Earth. But, you know, there's all sorts of things as you grow up, you know, that you've really got to learn. You know, I've had a lot of, you know, I have a lot of years, you know, and from the time when I was a kid, I've seen a lot of friends that have gotten to bad things and, you know, they didn't expect to, but they kind of, you know, had problems and stuff. And so, you know, we always got to be aware that, you know, we need to have personal safety and we need to do wise things in life. And so, you know, I think that's the kind of, you know, what I get out of my own story, you know, that I myself as a person, you know, I have to be careful what I do and to do things right. You know, and I think that's an important lesson, you know.
It is, and that certainly comes through in your book. Man, do you have any other questions for Terry?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. Terry, your website address.
Yeah, it's www.starparkadventures.com.
StarParkAdventures.com.
Yes, StarPark Adventures, AdventurES.com.
Well, this has been...
StarParkAdventures.com.
This has been a really interesting conversation. I'm really grateful to have Ben help with it. It's always, as I mentioned earlier, great to have kids, especially those that read the book, to ask the questions, because now we know what's important to them. So, Ben, I really, really thank you for helping me. I know that Terry appreciates the questions that you had asked. And, Terry, thank you very much for explaining more about the book. And it's been a real interesting conversation. I know that the listeners, they themselves, even if they're adults, I'm sure will enjoy this book. And if might even consider getting the book for one of their kids or grandkids. So, again, it's Castle Boss, Book 1. From Earth to the Asteroid. And as you have heard, it sounds like a really exciting book. So thank you again, and I appreciate both of you being online. This is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.